This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, July 15th, 2011. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Theater Squared, announcing its 2011-2012 lineup. Season 6 includes the comic farce Boing Boing, a new staging of It's a Wonderful Life, the comedy Tigers Be Still, and Robert Ford's The Fall of the House. For more information or to subscribe, theater2.org or 443-5600.
We have a musical Friday ahead. Babette Allen, Arkansas's 2005 fiddling champion, will talk to us about an upcoming fiddle camp at Ozark Folkways and play for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And Robert Ginsburg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz program, has an appetizer for Saturday night's opening concert of the 13th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Festival.
And yesterday on Ozarks, we talked with Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor about the debt ceiling discussions in Washington. Today, we cross the political aisle and hear from Senator John Bozeman about the matter. First, Grand Lake near Grove, Oklahoma, is closed to swimmers this summer, and two other lakes may also be impaired. Certain algae blooms that produce microtoxins as they decay are making some individuals who've had primary contact ill. So, are Ozark's lakes and streams at risk? Ozark's largest Jacqueline Froelich takes a look at the science.
In order to understand the odds for a toxic blue-green algae advisory cropping up Sam Beaver Lake, we need to go to the source.
My name is Thad Scott. I am an assistant professor in the Department of Crop, Soil, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And I am a limnologist and biogeochemist, which is I'm a scientist that studies inland water ecosystems.
Blue-green algae, BGA for short, are responsible for life on Earth as we know it. Plus, they color our lakes a lovely aquatic blue.
Blue-green algae are a group of photosynthetic organisms, so similar to the plants you see outside in your lawn, but they are microscopic and they live in the water. So they are the organisms, along with other types of algae, that make the water green. Blue-green algae are the most ancient of all algae, and they're not really algae at all. They're actually bacteria. So the more technical term for blue-green algae is cyanobacteria. And that is because their biology is more similar to these ancient organisms. So what blue-green algae did for us was they made the Earth possible to inhabit. They lived in the oceans billions of years ago, and they evolved this process of oxygenic photosynthesis. So they evolved this process where they take carbon dioxide and make organic matter and evolve oxygen out of their cells. So they gave us our oxygen-rich atmosphere. So that's the first thing they did for us, and they continue to live in our oceans and lakes and rivers, and they provide the base of the food web for all the other organisms that we appreciate out in nature.
And like plants, blue-green algae or cyanobacteria have many varieties. Certain cyanobacteria in ripe conditions release toxins, like the kind found in Oklahoma's Grand Lake.
So I don't know which species of blue-green algae they're finding in Grand Lake, but there are a number of them that produce a fairly limited number of toxins, actually. And the most common cyanobacterium and toxin is the Cyanobacterium microcystis, which produces the toxin microcystin.
Again, microcystins are produced by other BGA as well, Scott said, and are common.
It's only whenever they get to such high concentrations and they begin to produce the toxins that we see perhaps water quality conditions that deteriorate due to them being there.
So what are the conditions that lead to blue-green algae toxicity? Lake levels receding, hot weather, excess nutrients from fertilizers, and treated sewage entering the water?
All of those things you just said. What all algae like to grow are a very stable water column, water that's not moving around a lot when the water doesn't circulate much. Blue-green algae like that particularly because they have evolved a mechanism to float to the surface so they can get closer to the sunlight. Blue-green algae are also very effective in very warm temperatures. So this is the time of year when blue-green algae are generally at their greatest abundance, even in the even in waters that have the best water quality because temperatures are right. The third thing has to do with this concept of nitrogen limitation or the relative abundance of both nitrogen and phosphorus. So you can have water bodies that become enriched with a lot of nutrients, but the relative proportion of those nutrients is out of whack with the demands of the algae themselves.
If you've driven by a cow pond covered in green scum, that's an algae bloom. And as the cells die, toxins are released.
It depends which toxin they come in contact with. The different toxins have different effects. There are neurotoxins, there are hepatotoxins, and so there are a variety of different ones. It would depend which one is there.
Outbreaks similar to what's occurred at Grand Lake are rare, Scott says, but primary contact may cause skin rash, itchy eyes, and throat. Drinking the water may cause gastrointestinal distress, fever, headache, severe muscle and joint pain. Long-term exposure to water or eating fish that consume cyanotoxins may cause liver or nerve damage. An article published this week in the magazine Discovery links a variant cyanotoxic compound to LAS, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. 21 research teams from 11 countries are investigating. Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe was reported to be suffering from the effects of cyanotoxicity, claiming flu-like symptoms after swimming in Grand Lake.
Occasionally it happens, and it also depends on what standards are sort of set by the governing agencies to sort of send up the red flag on what is potentially dangerous. And that can vary across states and across even local areas.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Oklahoma has been tracking the outbreak there. The Little Rock office of the Army Corps said on background that it routinely conducts water quality sampling at swim beaches, testing for nitrates, fecal coliform, and E. coli, but it does not test for cyanotoxins. But if a complaint is received, it would investigate in coordination with the Arkansas Department of Health. Randy Easley, environmental coordinator for Fort Smith, also said on background that Lake Fort Smith is too pristine for such an outbreak, but they do monitor Lee Creek and City Lake. Data show that while phosphorus has decreased in Beaver Lake, what with the poultry industry better controlling land application of its phosphorus-rich litter, algae biomass is increasing. And according to Thad Scott, over the past 25 years, Beaver Lake's temperature has risen by 2 degrees. Bob Morgan is manager of environmental quality for Beaver Water District, which serves Rogers, Bentonville, Springdale, and Fayetteville.
We do monitor for algae every week, and right now we're monitoring twice a week. And we get our sample, and we take it into our lab with our microscope, and we do our taxonomy and come up with the species of algae that we have and get the number of algae cells per milliliter so we can watch it and see what we're doing. And what we're really looking for is when the blue-green algae start increasing, that's probably when our taste and odor are going to start showing up. If they were to get fairly high, then we might want to start looking for the toxins. And we have test strips that can detect the toxins.
And if positive, then more advanced testing would be ordered. Bob Morgan said algae blooms are rare on Beaver Lake, found only in certain isolated coves. Plus, eutrophic or older lakes packed with plant material tend to produce more blue-green algae. And in the scheme of things, Beaver Lake is still quite young and very fluid. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The deadline to make a decision about the country's debt ceiling is now 17 days away. The president has given congressional leaders 2 days to report to him about which options they'll support. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman talked yesterday to Michael Hiblin from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock about the issue.
First off, what do you make on the minority leader Mitch McConnell's proposal? Well, there's a number of different things being proposed today. He's brought out another proposal about a select committee that would be much like the BRAC process, where they close military bases, and it would be a group of congressmen that appointed to it, and then would come back, and then you'd have a an up and down vote, based on what they came out with. So there's a number of good proposals out there. What I'm trying to do is find something, as we go through all of these and look at it, something that will cut spending significantly. We can't continue borrowing 40 cents of every dollar. And I think we're really realizing that by the president's come out and said, if this isn't done, then all of these bad things are going to happen. And at some point, that's true. But it shows that we're borrowing money, to do all of these things. And so we have to get our fiscal house in order. So we need to cut spending. We need to put a cap on future spending. And then I very much would like, and this is difficult to get done. I don't really understand why, but I'd like to pass a balanced budget amendment here. That doesn't pass the amendment. What that does is allow it to go to the states, and then the individual states, the people, would decide if they wanted a balanced budget amendment. And I think putting ourselves in a situation like we have in Arkansas, forcing us to not spend more than we have, would be a great thing.
If negotiations aren't successful in reaching a joint compromise, could you go along with something like what Senator McConnell is proposing?
Well, there's all kinds of proposals that are coming out. I'll be looking at all of those. And I feel very, I feel like that at some point we will reach a compromise where both sides, despite a lot of the reports, really are working very, very hard. Nobody wants a default. And so both sides really are working hard to come up with a plan that gets us back on the right course. The reality is, if we will do the things that we need to do to cut our spending, get our fiscal house in order, we'll be stronger than ever, because the whole world is in really bad shape fiscally. We're the world leader. And if we will do that, then we will become a great magnet for investment, and like I say, be stronger than others than ever. It's a great opportunity if we'll get it done.
Well, what do you think, though, the in terms of this has become such a huge divisive issue right now, but people are focusing very much. You can definitely see that from what I'm seeing. But what do you think of the tone that this debate has taken?
Well, I'm a guy that very much believes that it's okay to disagree, but you don't need to be disagreeable. And that's true on both sides, Democrats and Republicans. And we need to debate. Everybody has strong feelings, in regard to what they feel like is the best course for the country. So we need to debate hard. We need to stand up certainly that's okay. At some point, though, we do need to reach an agreement. And for those people that are out there that work in various things that rely on an inspector from the government to come in, if the inspector's not there, the plant doesn't function and the people go home. They haven't gotten us in this mess, so it's not their fault. So to protect those folks, we've got to get this thing figured out. And again, I think that we will.
Yeah, you think we will reach an agreement one way or another?
Yes, right. I feel very strongly that we do. Again, neither side wants to default. And yet the problem is, if we don't stand strong and get some real savings, if we don't accomplish some, a path to significant reducing our spending, we'll just push this down for another year or two. And then at that point, we'll have a financial crisis. I think that everyone realizes, and I know the people, I'm home every week as I visit with people, people understand that you just can't continue doing this. So you have a crisis now, or you have a crisis in a year or two. But right now, the course that we're on is simply unsustainable. The people of Arkansas, families, businesses, they've all tightened their belts. They understand what sacrifice is about. Everybody's cut spending but the federal government. And so we've done just the opposite. And so we've got to get back on track.
Arkansas Senator John Bozeman talked with Michael Hiblin from our content partner KUAR yesterday. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, though they won't be performing, are a pair of reporters for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Dan Kraft to my left, to his left, Joel Walsh. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Kyle.
Great to be here. Thanks.
A couple of stories that we're talking about that will be in this weekend, right?
That's right.
First, Joel, I want to talk to you about a story that you have coming up about ambulance and ambulance service.
Sure. It's a little bit of a government accountability story. The agreement that gave Central EMS exclusive rights for emergency, non-emergency services for the past 3 years is up for renewal. If that agreement does get renewed, it'll go into effect for another 5 years. And as some of your listeners may know, Central EMS is the sole provider for ambulance services in most of Washington County. There were some questions when the agreement was initially formed 3 years ago. Would Central EMS be able to handle the added workload? What would this mean in terms of rates and city subsidies? So what I'm trying to do is explore a little bit of that with this story.
Is there a deadline for when this deal has to be decided upon?
Right. So it automatically renews in September unless one or multiple parties opt out of it.
And Dan, you have a story about – well, no, it's not you.
It's not me. I'm actually just here because Tracy Neal out of our Bentonville office couldn't be here today, so we're talking about one Tracy's putting together.
And it's about – ankle bracelets.
Yes.
Not fashion.
Oh, dang it.
No. not the kind you would buy, down at right. One of the stores on Dixon Street made out of hemp or leather.
Monitors, I should.
These are for the bad guys. Mm-hmm. These are bracelets that are fitted for folks as a condition of their bond to let them out of jail. One of the district judges up in Benton County has been making a lot of use of them. Helps get people out of jail where they might sit inside otherwise on a higher bond. But some folks are saying that they're awfully expensive and that the people that are wearing them really can't afford it, and they're going to end up getting thrown back in jail anyway, not being able to pay for this monitoring service.
Ah, I see. So if part of your sentence includes, instead of incarceration, the monitor, you have to pay for...
You have to pay for the service, but this is actually before you're ever convicted. This would be when you've been arrested and you're out on bond awaiting a trial for the most part.
I see.
Judge Karen up in Benton County has been using it mostly for drug cases, but for some other ones as well.
I don't even understand how they work.
Well, isn't it so that your parole officer or whatever can keep tabs on
you?
No,
I know that.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I don't know how they physically work. Do they emit a signal?
I'm not positive how these particular ones work either, but I know Tracy will have some details.
All right. And, okay, do you know the days that they're going to run?
I believe both of these are running Sunday. The Benton County papers, that would be the Benton County Daily Record and the Rogers Morning News, will feature the ankle bracelet story more prominently, as that's going on up there, where the Washington County papers will probably run Joel's a little bit larger, since that's their ambulance service for a lot of those readers.
But they'll be in it.
They'll both be in all four of the papers.
Right. Gotcha.
On Sunday.
That's right.
Joel, Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. The University of Arkansas system has a new president. The Board of Trustees selected a former dean of the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences for the position. Donald Bobbitt will replace outgoing U.S. System President B. Allen Sugg. Bobbitt is currently the Provost and Vice President of Academic Affairs at the University of Texas Arlington. He was one of four people asked to interview this week for the position by the Board of Trustees.
It's now up to a prosecutor to determine if a crime was committed after a state audit found some employees at the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department were being paid for hours they weren't working. Investigators determined that for decades, employees in the legal division were getting a half day off with pay every 3 weeks. Highway Department spokesman Randy Ort says the probe began internally.
This is a process that We actually initiated ourselves last summer. Some information came to light here within the department of some inconsistencies in the way our legal division was reporting leave time, and our internal audit division here at the department began a review of those practices.
The investigation would later be turned over to the Division of Legislative Audit, which determined wrongdoing had occurred. Pulaski County Prosecutor Larry Jegley will now determine whether the action was criminal.
The 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis has upheld a lower court ruling that partially halted construction on a $2 billion coal-fired power plant in southwest Arkansas. The appeals panel affirmed Judge Bill Wilson's order, in which environmentalists sought to stop work in 8 acres of wetlands. Scott McLeod of Southwestern Electric Power Company, or SWEPCO, says the decision was disappointing but not surprising.
In many cases like this, courts often decide to let an injunction remain in place until there is a ruling on the merits of the case itself. SWEPCO is optimistic we will prevail when the U.S. District Court rules on the challenges to the Corps of Engineer permit.
Attorney Richard Mays represents the Sierra Club, Audubon, Arkansas, and other groups fighting the plant. He sees Thursday's ruling as significant because it says those groups have standing to file suit, have shown a likelihood of success on the merits of the case, and have shown a likelihood of imminent harm if the temporary injunction is lifted.
The Eighth Circuit has gone to great lengths here, issuing a 29-page opinion that reviews its comprehensive examination of the record in this case. That is unusual.
May says he hopes the federal district court will rule on a motion for summary judgment within the next couple of months. Meanwhile, construction on the plant continues, and SWEPCO says it is set to begin generating power in late 2012.
And you may recall 2 weeks ago, the Cherokee Nation, centered in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, held an election for principal chief. The Cherokee Nation is the second largest sovereign tribe in the nation, with 309,000 enrolled members and 50,000 registered voters. The election between three-term incumbent Chief Chad Smith and longtime Cherokee Councilman Bill John Baker had Baker winning initially, then Smith officially, then Baker again after a hand recount. Both candidates have now cried foul. 15,000 votes were cast in the election, almost half for Baker and half for Smith. The Baker campaign says it's now time for Chief Chad Smith to concede. Dr. Leslie Hanna is coordinator of the Cherokee Studies Program at Northeastern State University in Tahlequah. He says clearly mistakes were made in the tallying, but in the end, this election, he says, will likely leave the tribe divided.
The Cherokee Nation is split about as down the middle as it's going to be, as it could ever be. And my fear for that is that no matter who comes out of this as the chief, it's going to be a rough at least first year, maybe even 2 years, maybe an entire administration, even an entire 4 years for whoever's the chief out of this.
Dr. Leslie Hanna characterizes Chad Smith as a conservative who seeks to grow the tribe's casino economy and provide more educational opportunities. Bill John Baker, by comparison, Dr. Hanna says, is more liberal and seeks to expand tribal health care and microenterprise. This week, the Cherokee Supreme Court has intervened, ordering a hand count of all ballots cast to take place tomorrow.
Ozarks at Large is supported by KUAF's contributing listeners and by Horizon Restaurant, offering fine dining in both an indoor and outdoor casual atmosphere. The menu includes a variety of in-house dishes using local and organic produce. Overlooking Beaver Lake, just outside of Eureka Springs, 253-5525, or horizonrestaurant.net for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, and with us is Becca Beckett-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
I really wanted to take this week off.
Because?
I'm tired. I don't think I've ever taken a week off, but I couldn't. Because then I couldn't tell you about the cool artist in Eureka Springs who paints pet portraits. Tomorrow is another of the new Saturday Art Adventures in Eureka Springs. And the theme this week is pets.
Mm-hmm.
So that means there will be giant dog and cat cutouts where kids of all ages can pose for pictures, where you poke your head through.
Sure, sure.
There will be a pet and owner look-alike contest. There will be a pet parade. And there will be demonstrations by artist Betty Johnson, who paints pet portraits.
Okay.
I love this woman. She was one of those kids who was always pictured with a dog or a cat or a duck. There's a picture mm-hmm. of her howling with a dog when she was a little kid. an artist all her life, she finally decided, well, why don't we put that passion for pets to work? And she paints pet portraits. So you can take her great photos of your pet, and she will make a pet portrait for you. Now, you're going to have to negotiate price and stuff because we didn't talk about that.
Okay.
But she has her own muses, Lily, who's a 7-year-old Boston Terrier, and Zoe, who's a 4-year-old pug. And if you need a furry muse, the Good Shepherd Humane Society will be at Basin Spring Park with furry critters that you can adopt. So all in all, it's a win-win situation.
And this takes place when?
This is Saturday in Eureka Springs. Starts about 10. The pet parade's at 3. And, you know, just like I thought everyone should have a child after we adopted Amanda, I now think everyone should have a dog. So you can find out more at 253-6164 or EurekaSpringsArtAdventure.com. And then Saturday evening, you can take the kids to the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks for the Firefly Fling. You talked to them the same day I did, right, Antoinette?
Yes, we did.
So what did you think?
Sounds pretty cool. She, Marie Buchan, who's helping produce the event, took us around the garden, sort of pointed out where things will be so you could sort of get a better vision of what it's going to look like. Because I have not attended the event.
I haven't either, because every time I try to go, there's such a crowd that I just give up and turn around.
It's really a lot of fun.
And I suspect that that will be true again.
Probably.
Fairy houses in the shade garden, and wishing chimes in the vegetable garden, and bread on a stick. I so want to do that.
Yes, that sounded delicious. Chef Michael from NWAC, I think, is coming
to help Michael
with that.
Yeah, Michael Kuvner. Mm-hmm. And they're going to wrap dough around a stick like marshmallows, and you can roast it over the fire. Mm. Fire fun for kids.
I'm kind of excited about the fire spinners, speaking of fire.
Yeah.
And Bongo Willie. And Jason Sewell of Trike Theater has a new shadow and blacklight puppet play called Ta-da.
Where will that take place?
Wherever they put him.
Oh, okay.
I think in the new Little Sprouts area, but it won't be until later. It doesn't start till 9:10.
Because it's got to be dark.
Right.
Right. It's based on the book Houdini, the Amazing Caterpillar. 6 to 10 Saturday, Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville. $8 for individuals, $24 for families of 4, and $40 for groups of 6. And there will be shaved ice and things like that for sale. And finally, it's Miss Arkansas Weekend.
In Hot Springs.
You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for the Miss Arkansas pageant because when I first started at the Springdale News, Deanie Walker, who was the pageant matriarch of Northwest Arkansas, came in, took me by the ear and said, "You're going to cover the Miss Northwest Arkansas pageant." I said, "I don't know." She said, "Uh-huh, yeah, you are." And I ended up meeting so many wonderful girls. Stephanie Strait, who was Miss Northwest Arkansas. Regina Hopper, who was Miss Arkansas. Debbie Turner, who was Miss America. There are great young women underneath those crowns. There are 13 young women representing the 12 counties of northern and western Arkansas out of the 46 total competing. The final preliminary pageant starts at 7:30 tonight, and Saturday's finale starts at 7:30 tomorrow at Summit Arena, and tickets are available at Ticketmaster. The third Friday Twilight Walk, 5 to 9 o'clock tonight in downtown Rogers. Hello Dolly continues at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale with shows at 7:30 today, 7:30 tomorrow, and 3 o'clock Sunday. Mm-hmm. Opera in the Ozarks continues this weekend. We're wrapping it up.
Getting close to that finish line.
July 22nd is the last show. So, Die Fledermaus tonight, The Marriage of Figaro tomorrow night, and there's a special show Sunday at Arend Art Center, 800-595-4849, and Fun Bags perform tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. At UARC?
8 o'clock at the UARC Ballroom, including people like Jason Sewell and Kevin Kinder and Mike Thomas and Julie Gable.
Mark Landon Smith.
Very funny people. And it's only $5. And you will laugh until you can't breathe. So that's my advice for the weekend.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Biggin-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellins. With me is Robert Ginsburg. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you, Kyle.
Robert puts together the Summer Jazz Concert Series. This year is the 13th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series. And also, you are the founder of the North Arkansas Jazz Society.
That's true, Kyle. And if anyone has not heard that our kickoff event for the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series is this Saturday, they just haven't been listening to KUAF.
I was going to say, welcome to the first time you've ever been to KUAF.
Right.
It's going to start off with a solo piano.
This was a coup, Kyle. We have Eldar Jangirov, this prodigy pianist. He's 24 years old now, and I found out he was going to be in Tulsa and have a down day, so we're sneaking him over here for a solo concert.
You talked to him. Now, you've never seen him play, right?
Not live.
Right. You talked to him
about a week ago. And he was at home in New York, and he's a very, very well-spoken and thoughtful young man. And it was a revealing conversation in as much as you always want to get in the minds of these people who at a very, very early age are recognized as genius. And he was very eloquent.
His father was a mechanical engineer, is a mechanical engineer. His mother, a musician.
Right. I asked him about, you know, what kind of led him into being a musician.
I didn't really have a choice not to play. It was kind of like a bond between my parents and their love, and you know, for my father it was a hobby, and for me it was just a part of my general education. You know, it was just something that I enjoyed when I was a kid, and I just don't really remember not ever having music in my life. So it was always something that I enjoyed. And the music that I always heard, some of the first impressions that I really have of music in general is hearing someone like Chick Corea or Oscar Peterson play in the house, which shaped a certain amount of perception of what music is, what I wanted to do. And as I started getting involved in music, my mom started teaching me classical music, which is something that I've always kept in my life, and I think has influenced a lot of the things and perceptions that I have in my playing. That's basically how I began. That's like the basic short story of how I began playing music.
We should mention that this concert is Saturday night, 8 o'clock, Star Theater.
That's right, at the Walton Arts Center, and it's a very intimate and wonderful environment to hear this sort of intimate performance.
You can see in this performance with the solo piano, you can see the hands moving.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, you're going to see him at work.
Well, and if for anyone that might have seen the solo concert with Hiromi a year ago at the Walton Arts Center, the Japanese piano prodigy, it's more than hands moving. It's full body contact.
Did you ask him at all about influences or anything like that?
I did ask him because I knew that at a very young age, when he was 12, he was on Marion McPartland's show, and I knew that that had to help catalyze his career. But as it turns out, there are a lot of things in this young man's life that actually serve as a catalyst to his creativity.
To me, every gig is a catalyst. You know, every time there's an interaction, and every time there's a social interaction for the audience, and the audience has a chance to hear the music and enjoy it, that to me is a catalyst.
You've produced a very solid body of recorded work now on Sony, your self-titled debut recording with John Patitucci and Michael Brecker, the live recording at the Blue Note with, I believe there was guest appearances by Chris Bode and Roy Hargrove. And then there was the Grammy-nominated reimagination, Virtue, again with some incredible guest artists, Nicholas Payton and Joshua Redman. And your most recent release, and your first solo outing, which is Three Stories. When you go into the studio, do you take a conceptual approach to each project, or do you just build upon repertoire that is you're into at the time?
Well, different recordings, I feel like, reflect different things and different points in my life, and certainly, naturally, the latest work that I've done tends to be my favorite one, and I think it's the work that's the most representative of what I do and how far I've come towards that development, where, you know, you always try to get closer to that image when the music becomes you, and that reflection is the music of you, of your personality, of the traits that the musicians are playing with you, if it's a band situation.
You mentioned that you sneak him over here because he's in Tulsa performing and doing some master classes.
They have a jazz camp for children, high school kids, and every summer. It's put on by Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame, and Eldar is a regular there. Hmm. And it was just a matter of them. He's going to be there for 3 days, and this Saturday was a down day for him, so it was fairly easy to convince him to come over to do a concert. And I've also found with these kind of people, they have to be playing the piano. I mean, they just have to. Another case in point would be young Yaniv Tabenhaus, who a lot of people have come in contact with since he moved here from Israel. He got a full scholarship to study with Yura Margulis. Yaniv, if he's in a room with a piano, he's at the piano.
He just sits. Eldar has performed at Carnegie Hall.
Yes.
The Blue Note.
Yes. Keep going. I mean, with symphony orchestras, he's really a world-renowned artist. He's one of those people that is probably well-recognized, and not only because of his jazz, but he's also a very accomplished classical musician as well. So that broadens the horizon of those who appreciate him.
And when you talked to him, he kind of gave you his itinerary that he's going to have after he's in Fayetteville.
Oh, check this out.
Now I'm going to Tulsa and, of course, Arkansas, and then I'm going to Tokyo. Then I'm playing with the San Diego Symphony. Then I'm playing at the Monterey Jazz Festival, Ravinia Festival. Then Russia, Russian National Orchestra, and Monterey Jazz Festival, San Francisco Jazz Festival. So it's taken me on a pretty sizable tour, which I'm so happy about. And you know, as long as that communication is made with the fans and the music listeners and musicians, anybody who's open to listening to music, I'm extremely happy and extremely blessed.
Tomorrow night, 8:00, Walton Arts Center Star Theater.
Tickets are still available. It's limited seating. There's only 165 seats, more or less. And you know, summer's kind of slow around here. A lot of people are gone, so we have not sold out.
That's okay.
Okay.
There's still time. Walton Arts Center is where the ticketing is taking place?
Yes, you can call them at 443-5600. That's 479. Or you can go to their website, www.waltonartscenter.org.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Kyle.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grado.
We're inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and with us is Babette Allen. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. And the reason we have asked you to come today is because, well, I'm a sucker for the fiddle.
You are.
And I'm going to ask you about your instrument and the CD you have and all of those things. But first, I want to talk to you about a camp that's coming up.
Right.
Where you will be instructing fiddlers of all levels?
It looks like it, yes. Looks like a pretty good range from, say, middle beginning to intermediate, a good intermediate range.
And this is
students.
Taking place at Ozark Folkways?
At Ozark Folkways, yes.
Near Winslow, or can we say it's in Winslow?
I think we can say it's in. It's a south of the sign that says
right.
Winslow.
So close enough.
Yeah.
It seems like a somewhat intimidating instrument because there's a lot happening. You've got fingers, you've got the bow, you've got placement, posture. It all matters?
Yes, it does. You're right. There are a lot of things that are going on and a lot of things going through a student's mind. And actually, you can see on their faces as they're thinking through each thing that they have to remember. But the importance of the posture and a lot of the things in technique is that in the end, it actually makes it easier to do, to play some things. It makes it easier to play faster. It makes it easier to play more in tune. It makes it easier for string crossings. So it's important to learn proper technique from the beginning.
You were named the Arkansas State Fiddle Champion in 2005.
Yes.
So, and that's a competition.
Correct.
So you've participated in one. You've also judged.
Right.
What is that like?
For me, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. There are a lot of fiddle competitions across the country, and I've been in several. I really started in the competitions because I heard that people were having a lot of fun. For me, it's a lot of pressure as well. I think the fun part is in seeing old friends and maybe jamming and playing some other tunes. The competition itself, that normally you have to play a hoedown waltz and a tune of choice, and so you practice them, and in most contests they have time limits. Some of them it's you have to play all of them in 4 minutes, some it's 6 minutes, and so there's pressure to make sure you get your pieces down to that time limit. And then something happens with me when I go out on a stage and somebody brings a microphone down to my instrument and there are judges sitting in the back not looking. I don't know. You try to perform for the audience, but somehow the pressure of being judged for it is there. So it's difficult for me to play in a contest and be judged. On the other hand, it's not as hard performing as a judge, because in most contests, when you perform, when you're a judge, they also call on you to perform so the audience can see who you are, and that's not near as nerve-wracking, and it's the exact same people.
Well, what's some of the criteria that they're basing their judging on? I mean, I would imagine, you know, hitting all of your notes and things like that, but...
Well, actually, I think what's supposed to be first in mm-hmm. most of the contests I've judged is rhythm and timing.
Oh.
And because a lot of them started off wanting danceable music, because that's what fiddle music, that's what most people think of, and that's what it's been. So you want to be able to, like, when I judge, I want to see if my foot's tapping, you know, is this music going to want me to jump up and dance and feel good? So that's one of the major criterias. Tone, quality, some of the things that would be the same in playing if you were performing as well. You know, tone, quality, playing in tune is not one of the major criteria, but certainly when you get to the upper level, it matters.
The name of the CD is that you have is Raina's Waltz.
Correct.
Do you prefer waltzes over others, or?
I do. I do like waltzes. This CD is called Raina's Waltz because one of the tunes on there is called Raina's Waltz, and it was written for me by a very famous Texas fiddler, Randy Elmore. Raina is my first name. So he liked my first name, so he called it Raina's Waltz. And so that's what I called the CD.
The Fayetteville Polka?
Yes.
As in Fayetteville, Arkansas, or is it?
Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Okay, written in 1856. Tell me a little bit about Fayetteville Polka.
Ferdinand Zellner was a music teacher here in Fayetteville, and he wrote that. He when Civil War came to Fayetteville, he left and went to San Francisco. But I became acquainted with this because there was a play written that was performed here in Fayetteville about the history of Fayetteville, and that was played in it, and I thought, I'm going to play that song. So I played a lot, actually.
So here is someone who wrote Fayetteville Polka in Fayetteville, moved to San Francisco.
Correct.
And you were born
in San Francisco.
Oh.
Right.
So,
never thought of that, but
meant to be.
Did you pick up the fiddle in California when you were growing up?
Yes. Well, actually kind of started with violin in school, in elementary school. A violinist came to school and played Hot Canary, and I was sold. And just played, so I played in the school orchestra starting. My dad played piano, so I played a lot of music with him. He wasn't a classical player, but he used to have little combos and dance bands and things like that. So played a lot of old standards and things like that. And then somewhere along the line, I heard, you know, people fiddling, and thought, I want to do that too.
How often do you have the instrument in your hands every day?
Yes, but it's very close to me, and I'm very attached to the. I actually have two violins, and I'm very attached to them, and they're very like within arm's reach at almost any time. But they need to be. I have students and, you know, want to grab them and play.
What's the difference between the two? Are they the same type of violin, or are they two different kinds, or?
Well, let's start with the other one.
Okay.
The one that I didn't bring with me, okay, is a violin that was made for my dad's cousin in San Francisco in 1923. Okay. And they would go after school by the violin maker's shop and watch the violin being made. And then many years later, when I was playing, the violin was given to me. And so I've got it, and I've played it a lot for years. I don't play it all the time now because it's not really the sound I'm looking for all the time. But when I do play it, which is frequently, it's really has a beautiful tone. So I keep thinking, oh, maybe I should go back and forth a little more, but that one has sentimental value. This violin here that I've got is a contemporary violin made by Jonathan Cooper from Gorham, Maine. And I met him years ago at Mark O'Connor's fiddle camp. He used to come to the camps, and he'd make a violin or a part of a violin, and several people I know have Cooper violins, and for me, it was a real treasure when I got it. It just so happens that I had gone to a Mark O'Connor, actually I was teaching at one of the Mark O'Connor fiddle camps in San Diego, and John had violin set out right down from my classroom. And when I walked by him, I said, gosh, I'm going to get to try out some of your violins. And he picked it up and he said, here, try this one. And I played about five notes and that was it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Maybe see it?
It.
Sure. In the case right now. It seems like that might be a good segue for me to ask, do you want to play something?
Well, I could.
Okay. We'd be honored.
Yes. I could. I could play something for you.
Babette Allen talked to us and played for us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio this week. She'll be teaching fiddle at Ozark Folkways in Winslow next weekend, July 23rd and 24th. You can learn more about the camp at ozarkfolkways.com. You can also visit Babette's website at reinababette.com. Those links can be found at our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
And we talked about much more with Babette Allen when she was in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, including what it's like to when you're first starting to learn the violin and things like that. And you can hear more from the conversation
at ozarksatlarge.com.
All right. You went to Harry Potter. I was going to say last night, but earlier this morning.
Earlier this morning, yes, I did. And there were lots of people dressed up. It was really a lot of fun. And you can see some of those pictures on our Twitter and our Facebook page. I took some pictures here, and Ithy got to take some pictures in Fayetteville. Good time.
How was the movie?
It was good. It was good. It was a little shorter than I was expecting, but, I mean, it was pretty much just wrapping up loose ends because they split that last book into two parts. So. And you were out last night at the AMP.
Right. Went to see the B-52s.
How was that?
It was a lot of fun. The B-52s, Fred Schneider, still a lot of fun on stage. And Ultra Suede, featuring KUAF's own Rhonda Dillon, opened and had the crowd dancing. And it was a good time.
Good deal.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville.
Cherokee City.
Which is?
It is west of Gentry.
All right. Ithy and I will have weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9. Then Ithy will be
hosting on Monday.
Right. And you and I will be back together on Tuesday.
Yes, we will.
New editions of Ozarks at Large every weekday at noon. You can hear the encores at 7. If you want to learn more about the show, you can go to our website.
OzarksAtLarge.com.
And have a pleasant weekend, and please try to stay cool. It's going to be hot this weekend.